Chapter 2. Earth's First Deluge. Go and cut off Tiamat's life, and let the wines convey her blood to secret places, the Enuma Elish. We read from various sources that approximately 50,000 years ago a certain planetary body in our own solar system was mysteriously destroyed. This body has been called Tiamat, Phaeton, Lucifer, Marduk, Meldek, Rahab, and even Luna, not connected to the name later given to the moon. It was believed to have existed between Mars and Jupiter and was referred to as the second sun and may have been mistaken as such, because its atmosphere was resplendent with reflections of the actual sun. This is not as improbable as it sounds, since Venus, the morning star, the second planet from the sun and the third brightest object in the sky, is so bright that it casts a distinct shadow on a moonless night. Around the time of this event, the solar system, and later the Earth, was colonized by extraterrestrial beings who were either attracted to this solar system by that conflagration or upon coming here caused a calamity themselves. Whether the disaster was natural or not, the result was that mankind on Earth experienced total and long-lasting chaos and confusion. The surface of the planet Tiamat consisted mostly of great oceans. Upon its destruction, these vast saline waters entered into the Earth's atmosphere, causing the first of two massive prehistoric deluges and tribulations that mankind would experience. It is thought that the alien invaders took full advantage of this predicament and moved in to bring about colonization. They met no resistance from the disoriented and weakened inhabitants of the Earth, who believed their visitors were powerful gods. Some theorists, like the energetic Eric von Daniken, have also determined that there was a great intergalactic war between two or possibly more extraterrestrial forces in a neighboring galaxy or solar system. The result of this titanic war had enormous consequences for the Earth because, it is postulated, the losers on being pursued into our system pretended to take refuge on Tiamat. They even erected a makeshift radar-type station there to decoy their pursuers. However, the defeated ones had really taken refuge on planet Earth, not on Tiamat. Upon their arrival, they almost immediately went underground into existing caverns that through scans of the planet they knew existed. They also descended into other caverns that they themselves cut out of the living rock. There were at least five entire continents on Earth in primeval times called Appalachia, Tyrrhenia, Beringia, Fennoscandia, and Oceania. Our present continents are remnants of these. Beneath them were literally thousands of miles of subterranean passages, caverns, and refuges. Some of these remain today, and experts know that many of them were not made naturally. Many of our quaint myths and tales, like those of dwarves, trolls, elves, the little people and the Scandinavian king under the mountain, for example, concern these subterranean worlds. Almost all the Native American Indian tribes speak of their original residence beneath the surface of the earth. The pursuers, the victors of the war in the heavens, erroneously thinking that their enemies were on Tiamat, utterly annihilated it. This horrific act and its subsequent consequences were witnessed and recorded. And behold, a star fell from heaven, and the children of the earth began to tremble and quake before them and to flee from them. And again I saw how they began to gore each other and to devour each other, and the earth began to cry aloud. Book of Enoch. I saw in a vision how the heavens collapsed, and when it fell to earth I saw how the earth was swallowed up in a great abyss. And I lifted up my voice to cry aloud, and said, the earth is destroyed. Book of Enoch. And in those days Noah saw the earth, that it had sunk down and its destruction was nigh. And he arose from thence and went to the end of the earth and cried aloud to his grandfather Enoch. And Noah said bitterly, three times, hear me, hear me, hear me. And I, Enoch, said unto him, tell me what it is that is falling upon the earth, that it is in such evil plight and shaken. Book of Enoch. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as if it were a lamp, and the name of the star is called Wormwood, and many men died of the water, because they were made bitter. Rev 8:7-9:1. And the fourth angel sounded, and a third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened. Rev 8:7-9:1. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth. Rev 8:7-9:1. For this they are willingly ignorant of, the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. 2 Peter 3:5. Celtic records also speak of the deluge. I have been in the bark of Dylan, son of the wave, when the waters rose as lances, falling down from the skies, into the exposed abyss, Book of Taliesin. The Indians of Lake Missoula, Washington, have in their myths the following account. One summer morning the people were startled by a rumbling and a shaking of the earth, then the sun was blotted out, terrified people ran to the hills to get away from the pounding water, then a rain of ashes began to fall, it fell for several weeks. The Ute Indians relate, the sun was shivered into a thousand fragments, which fell to earth causing a general conflagration. Then T.A. Watts fled before the destruction he had wrought, and as he fled, the burning earth consumed his feet, legs, body, hands and arms, until at last, swollen with heat, the eyes of the god burst and tears gushed forth in a flood which spread over the earth and extinguished the fire. The Navajos, Coyotes, and Pueblos Indians have similar reports, in this vein. Their only food was meat, for all kinds of game were closed up with them. Then the men and animals began to come up from their caves and their coming up required several days. The earth was at this time very small and the light as scanty as it had been down below, for there was as yet no heaven, nor sun, nor moon, nor stars. From Teutonic legends, Earth sinks in the sea, the sun turns black, cast down from heaven are the hot stars, fumes reek, into flames burst, the sky itself is scorched with fire. From maverick catastrophist and researcher Commons Beaumont, we read, the flood, to the world generally a vague and nebulous tradition, really conceals the most appalling visitation and its ravages in the British Isles and Scandinavian lands may be retraced to more considerable extent by the effects of what geologists term the drift age. It was no mere ice drift, it was sudden and terribly swift and violent. It permanently affected the world's climate towards greater extremes of cold and damp, lengthened the solar year by enlarging the world's orbit. It shaped world history by compelling the flight of survivors to other less inhospitable climes and led in considerable degree to the dispersion of the Aryans. It inundated the British Isles for a period to a great extent except the higher lands. It was the drowning of Atlantis. The flood immortalizes the collision of a fallen planet, later termed Satan, actually a cometary body, with Earth, riddle of prehistoric Britain. The debris from Tiamat's destruction has become the asteroid belt with its own orbit. When it nears the Roche limit of this planet, the debris occasionally re-enters the atmosphere, falling to the surface. As researchers like Charles Fort have so splendidly collated, our Earth has seen strange rains of fish and frogs, oil and stone, hail and ice descending from the skies. What has been kept back is the fact that these anomalies are really the remains of an entire planet, that of Tiamat. The waters of its great oceans became frozen in space. When they entered our atmosphere, they liquefied, depositing their often live contents on the surface of Earth to the perplexion and bemusement of witnesses. When it was written in the Book of Revelation that the Battle of Armageddon would be fought in the air, it seems to refer to either the ramifications of the destruction of a second luminary in our own solar system or to the believable intergalactic war that strayed also into our backyard. See The Lost Zodiac and the works of Eric von Daniken, Emmanuel Velikovsky, William Bramley, David Hatcher Childress, and J.J. Herdack. As conjectured, the ensuing war of the air was obviously seen from the Earth by its then indigenous inhabitants. Moreover, the reconnaissance missions of the fallen gods in their strange chariots were also witnessed and recorded. These records remain today, though many believe them to be mere fairy tales. More than 30,000 written documents from all over the world tell of advanced beings who either came to Earth or who were already living on Earth. Jack Barringer, Past Shock. Now as I looked upon the living creatures, I saw four wings upon the ground, one by each of the living creatures, with their four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their composition was like the color of shiny amber, and all four wings had one likeness, and their composition was like a wheel in the middle of a wheel, Book of Ezekiel. Let's consider just a few of the strange references from the pages of the Bible Testaments, and think to ourselves whether there is some other tale going on other than that which has been expounded from the pulpit. And it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold a smoking furnace, and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces, Genesis 15:17. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them, and when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Ezekiel 1:19. Whithersoever the Spirit was to go they went, Thither was their spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels, Ezekiel 1:20. When those went, these went, and when those stood, these stood, and when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels, Ezekiel 1:21. Comma, and the pillar of the cloud went from before their face, and stood behind them, Exodus 4:19. Comma, his going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof, Psalms 19, 6. And I looked, and behold, a whirlwind came out of the north, a great cloud in a fire enfolding itself, and a brightness was about it, and out of the midst thereof is the color of amber out of the midst of the fire, Ezekiel 1, 4. And it came to pass, as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended, and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses, and all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose up and worshipped, every man in his tent door, Exodus 33, 9. Then they willingly received him into the ship, and immediately the ship was at the land whither they went, John 6, 21. And from the ancient Aryans and Hindus we have, he boarded the aerial vehicle with Kara, which was decorated with jewels and the faces of demons, and it moved with noise resembling the sonorous clouds. So Rawana and Maricha boarded the aerial vehicle resembling a palace, Vimana, from that Hermitage. Then the Demonas brought the Pospika aerial vehicle and placed Sita on it by bringing her from the Ashoka forest, and she was made to see the battlefield with Trijita. This aerial vehicle marked with swan soared into the sky with loud noise. An aerial chariot, the Pushpaka, conveys many people to the capital of Ayodhya. The sky is full of stupendous flying machines, dark as night, but picked out by lights with the yellowish glare. Mahavira of Babbabhuti, an 8th century Jain text, speaking of earlier records. Now that is chariot's greatness, breaking goes it, and thunderous is its noise, to heaven it touches, makes light lower it, a red fiery glare, and whirls dust upon the earth. The airplane occupied by Salvo was very mysterious. It was so extraordinary that sometimes many airplanes would appear to be in the sky, and sometimes there were apparently none. Sometimes the plane was visible and sometimes not visible, and the warriors of the Yadu dynasty were puzzled about the whereabouts of the peculiar airplane. Sometimes they would see the airplane on the ground, sometimes flying in the sky, sometimes resting on the peak of a hill, and sometimes floating on the water. The wonderful airplane flew in the sky like a whirling firebrand. It was not steady even for a moment, the Mahabharata. The head of Sanskrit at the University of Madras, D.R.V. Raghavan, writes, 50 years of researching these ancient works convinces me that there are living beings on other planets, and that they visited Earth as far back as 4000 BC. There is just a mass of fascinating information about flying machines, even fantastic science fiction weapons, that can be found in translations of the Vedas, Indian epics, and other ancient Sanskrit texts. Zicharia Sitchin, and others of his ken, are of the opinion that the losers in this cosmic Armageddon, that is, the visitors, were generally moral and good, and that their arrival here was generally a good thing for the Earth. This writer finds it difficult to accept this theory in its entirety. It is just as reasonable to assume, as the ancient texts advocate, that these visitors, being so remorselessly pursued, were immoral, negative beings, who had perhaps contributed to the corruption of their own home planet and who were finally being expunged. There is a great deal of information coming out of the ancient legends that convinces this writer that the visitors, for all their intellectual acumen and technological expertise, were morally corrupt, without spiritual sensibilities of any kind. These alien, criminal renegades took their cover on Earth, met with the indigenous tribes, were considered gods, and took full advantage of the relative credulity of their hosts. Having no love for the people of Earth, they almost immediately sought to enslave them. It is our opinion that they were successful, and that no one can have a real grasp of the history and progress of humankind without taking into consideration the idea of alien colonization. Many ancient legends speak of this visitation. For instance, the Hindu scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, relates the coming of a demon race which invaded the three planetary systems. One of the epithets given to the visitors was the Ant People, from the fact that they had the habit of mining and burrowing underground and living there in complex colonies. This was a practice that availed perfect concealment, as these renegades knew that it was absolutely imperative that they were not traced to this planet and that their previous hosts believed them utterly destroyed. The Celtic legends, and even the Bible, declare that the Nephilim, fallen angels, took refuge underwater in their crafts. No craft they knew, with woven brick and jointed beam to pile the sunward porch, but in the dark earth burrowed and housed like sunless ants in sunless caves, Aeschylus. And the king said to her, "Be not afraid, for what sawest thou?" And the woman said unto Saul, "I saw gods ascending out of the earth, I Samuel 28 hours, and 13 minutes. Dead things are formed from under the water, and the inhabitants thereof, Job 26, 5. With this kind of phenomena occurring, we can perhaps make sense of one of the most enigmatic edicts from the Yahwistic commandments: "You shalt not make for yourself a graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is under the water of the earth," Exodus 20, 4. In Edward Bulwer Lytton's book, The Coming Race, he describes the existence of advanced beings living in tunnels and caverns beneath the surface of the earth. He refers to these beings as the Ana, saying they were forced below because of earth changes and a flood which destroyed their civilization thousands of years before the biblical cataclysm. In David Icke's Children of the Matrix, we read, 36 underground cities have been discovered in Cappadocia so far, and some are huge complexes going down 8 levels. The ventilation systems are so efficient that even 8 floors down the air is still fresh. 30 vast underground cities and tunnel complexes have also been found near Derinkuyu in Turkey. The Hopi Indians speak of an underground world called Sipapuni, where they say their tribe originated. Interestingly, G. Warren Schufelt discovered the underground tunnels beneath Los Angeles, which the Hopi Indians had for centuries believed were inhabited by a lizard race over 5,000 years before. In his book Agartha, Robert E. Dickhoff tells of a Tibetan monk who learned that an alliance of reptilians and human black magicians were causing chaos and destruction in the surface societies by projecting malevolent energy fields into people's minds using that, which we call witchcraft, the manipulation of energy. Dickhoff says that the monk led 400 warrior monks into the caverns to do battle with this serpent cult. Scholar and researcher J.J. Herdeck declares, "In our research in Africa, the Far East and the mountains of South America, we have come across statuary of very grotesque beings, who according to the Indian and shamanistic tradition, went into the earth at the time of a great cataclysm." The Apache Indians tell stories of tunnels between their lands and the city of Tiahuanaco and claim that their ancestors traveled 4 years by this route. The Indian chiefs also assure that the tunnels were carved out by rays that destroy the living rock, and that their creators were comma beings who live near the stars, from Uriel's Machine by Christopher Knight and Robert Lomas. In Celtic mythology, the Tuatha De Danann, a powerful tribe of druid warriors, descended into the underworld through what are called the Sids. We could fill volumes with the references of alien visitation in connection with the Hollow Earth. These accounts of the ancients have been dismissed for centuries and often ridiculed and misunderstood. For instance, the visitors are sometimes described to be fantastic in aspect, sometimes as having two heads or faces, but this description is comprehensible when we realize that it refers to a face inside a space helmet, which appeared to our ancestors as two faces or heads. The Men of Brass or Bronze was also a title used for the visitors, possibly due to the metallic suits they wore. They also seem to have communicated in strange voices, many tongues. Can this not also be explained in practical terms? Can the references about the fallen angels in the Old Testament, Book of Enoch, and the Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, not be based on actual fact? The Nephilim had to begin calibrations of the Earth in relation to the neighboring planets and stars almost immediately after ascent from their subterranean havens. Although they were in no immediate hurry, they believed they could leave the planet whenever they desired. Earth was certainly not their home, but it was better than nothing in an emergency. But because they had arrived suddenly and not by choice, they were in a predicament as to where they were in celestial terms and in a quandary about where to go in the future. The Nephilim, with the help of the Neanderthal race, constructed and erected stone monuments and giant earth calendars on the plains for their astronomers to engage in calculations to orient themselves correctly in this new wing of the galaxy. There is some evidence to indicate that the Nephilim did not leave Earth immediately because they feared that the solar system after the destruction of Tiamat was magnetically unstable to the extent of preventing them from flying out and navigating easily. One does not drive their car through a volcano or earthquake by choice. The risk was too great for a time. They also did not know if their enemies were still watching for them or whether they had set some kind of warning alarm system that would signal the Nephilim's presence. The Nephilim established their main headquarters, Atlantis, on the continent of Appalachia. From this center they would corral and experiment on the indigenous Earth inhabitants taken from cultures and tribes that were shaken asunder by the recent celestial catastrophe. Nearly all the native cultures of the Earth record the visitation of strange and advanced individuals possessed of miraculous powers. An interesting anecdote which repeats throughout the ancient records and accounts is that the beings who visited the various countries were never numerically many. The records say that they appeared in groups of three or four members. The fact that the visitors were of such a small number is suggestive that they were actually contingents of a larger mass centered elsewhere, that they were on reconnaissance missions, and that were data gatherers and ambassadors sent out to the corners of the globe. The strangers could knit bones, provided food, took counsel, gave magnificent gifts, spoke in strange tongues, were intensely intelligent, and pointed to distant galaxies when asked about their origins. Many texts record that some of the visitors were also extremely vengeful when wronged, and they were after mineral wealth and human labor. See the works of David Hatcher Childress.